Good evening. Welcome to another episode of Lisa and Phil Ruin the Movies with me, your host, Lisa Schmeiser. With me tonight is our cat, or I should say our feline exchange student, because we're keeping him for a friend for a while.
And I'm your host, Philip Michaels.
This is why I don't bother to introduce you, because you do such a good job of introducing yourself.
I was just waiting for my moment.
A moment like this.
Yeah, so we got a lovely tweet from someone who tweeted me, because I am the host, and he said, I love this this ill-prepared train wreck of a podcast, and I choose to focus on the love part and not the train wreck part.
Flattery, sir, will get you everywhere. And next time, tweet me.
And today we...
Next time, tweet me.
Why would he do that? That's like tweeting the intern. Tweeting the cat.
Well, then perhaps you and the cat can finish this podcast.
Yes, dear.
I said good day, sir.
We also got a lovely email from a lady who offered to buy our martini supplies, which shows that she... I drink no martinis,
how
madam.
How close can she have been listening?
How dare you?
Yes, he drinks a lot of whiskey.
Mm-hmm. And taking a drink right there as you stop talking, just to prove the point.
Exactly. Well, did you make him... noise so that people know you're drinking and enjoying it?
No, I didn't. I can...
What are you drinking tonight, Phil? Tell the folks at home.
I'm having a rusty nail tonight.
And what's in a rusty nail?
A rusty nail is two parts scotch and one part drambuie. Mm-hmm. I tend to go heavy on the scotch and a little light on the drambuie because I don't like it as sweet as most people.
So really, it's like three parts scotch and one part
drambuie. It's 2.5 ounces of scotch and 1/2 ounce of drambuie. That's a like child could make this.
That's a 1-to-5 ratio, honey. Well, you're no longer 2-to-1.
Well, I... You know.
Math is fun.
Math is fun. Hey, let's talk about movies.
Let's talk about movies.
What movie are we ruining tonight, Lisa?
Magic Mike XXL.
Well, that's appropriate because I have not seen Magic Mike, nor have I seen its sequel, which I assume the...
Well, honey, the sequel's not out yet.
Well...
No one has seen Magic Mike XXL except for an ecstatic and grateful female press corps.
Okay, well, I have not seen it, nor do I plan to see it.
No. No. I think the thing I enjoy about you in the summer movie slate is it's basically 3 months where you're guaranteed never to set foot in a theater.
That's not true. I went to a theater but a week and a half ago.
What did we see a week and a half ago?
We saw Jaws, a 40-year-old motion picture.
That is flawless.
Flawless. Great movie.
Amazing movie.
We talked about this previously on the podcast where I said that Jaws is Steven Spielberg's greatest motion picture. I stand by that claim. And I
will actually cede to you on this point. Steven Spielberg's best movies are Man versus Nature, and this Jaws holds up. It's wonderful.
My only complaint about seeing Jaws on the big screen is I can now never watch it on a television again because it was such a an immersive experience seeing it up there on a giant screen.
It was as it was meant to be seen. Mm-hmm. So if you ever get the chance to watch it on a big screen, by all means do.
And do not take your 8-year-old to go see it as the fella behind us did. And he had to carry that child out of the movie.
That child was trying to burrow into the space between his neck and his shoulder. That man probably has a permanent skull-shaped divot from where his kid was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a great movie. Anyway, we're not talking about that. We're talking about Magic Mike XXL.
You know what's also as giant as a shark?
What's as giant as a shark, honey?
Magic Mike, from what I'm led to believe.
Magic Mike XXL?
Yes. The two X's stand for quality.
Or perhaps for the gender they're trying to appeal to.
Yes.
So how much do we need to tell the folks at home about this?
Well, we need to tell them nearly every... I assume Magic Mike... Here's what I know about Magic Mike.
There's a man, his name is Mike.
There's a man whose name is Mike, and he's magic. I assume he is a magician of some sort. Does he do close magic? Does he do children's parties? Does he do illusions, Lisa?
Well, no, there's the illusion of emotional intimacy in the first movie.
Oh, well, that's a good trick.
He would not be suitable for most children's parties, I think.
Mm-hmm. Watch me make the rabbit appear.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, my God. All right, and at the, 4-minute mark, we go into the family and friendly territory.
I don't understand what you're saying. Rabbits are a common staple of magicians who are magic like Mike.
So, no, you're very... The original film is a Steven Soderbergh production.
I like Steven Soderbergh.
Yeah, this is why it surprises me because you are something of a Steven Soderbergh fan.
I am something of a fan of his. Let me recount the movies of his that I've seen and how I feel about them.
Mm-hmm.
Really enjoyed Traffic.
Yes.
Thought that was great.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Topher Grace is very good in that.
It's Benicio Del Toro's movie.
Where is Topher Grace these days?
I have no idea.
I feel like we need to put out a Google search for him.
I have no idea.
Bing him, perhaps?
Really enjoy The Limey. The Limey mm-hmm. is fantastic. That is a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Out of Sight, I like it. Not as much as some people do. Mm-hmm. You know, that's... what's her name is in that? Jennifer Lopez. Jennifer Lopez. Mm-hmm. Not a fan, but yeah, it's an okay movie.
I have the elocution problem with her because her voice doesn't match her overall presentation,
right.
if you ask me.
The Ocean's 11 movies are fun romps with the exception of the second one.
I was going to say, if you just go by the odd numbers, they're okay.
Right. Well, that would be two of them.
Yes. I like to pretend Ocean's 12 never happened.
Yes. So mm-hmm. that's not a good motion picture. Mm-hmm. And what else of his have I seen? Lisa.
You're asking me like I am your biographer or something.
I'm going to try and talk.
So the point is Magic Mike is basically, it was billed as, oh, it's an autobiographical look at how Channing Tatum shook his booty to stardom, because he did work as an exotic dancer for a while. And in the movie, Mike is a dude who wants to be a carpenter, but actually makes his money by working in a male review with a bunch of other men.
A male review? And a burlesque, perhaps?
Perhaps, yeah. They don't ever really do like the full nude. It's male stripping, which is one of the most inherently unsexy things out there. And
no argument for me.
No. I was in college one time, and my RA, her sorority sisters, booked her a male stripper, and... she called us all out for a hall meeting so we could watch this guy do his thing. And it was the most grimly unerotic 5 minutes of my life.
To be quite honest,
uh-huh.
if I may revert to the male gaze for a moment,
uh-huh.
female stripping ain't much to write home about from a standpoint of eroticism and entertainment.
Yeah, so anyway, the point is, in this movie, there are lots of people who basically look like they have big beef chiclets bolted to their chest. And it's about the trials and tribulations of being forced to be subject to the female gaze.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, you could have just taken Hannah Rosen's book, The End of Men and the Rise of Women, and you could have like done an image.google.com search for a celebrity of your choice shirtless and stuck them in the blender and then topped it off with that scene from Fame where Coco has to take off her shirt for the photographer and she's crying while they take her picture. And that would be your movie, because the subtext to Magic Mike, there are two subtexts. One is, isn't it awful to have to be the object of female desire? It's so dehumanizing to be treated as an erotic object as opposed to a real human being. And number two is, women are awful.
I it seems that I have, to just close the loop on an earlier conversation, the only Steven Soderbergh thing I've seen all the way through that I did not mention was Behind the Candelabra.
We loved that.
I enjoyed it very much.
We both loved it.
Yes. I liked... there were parts of it I didn't care for.
Oh.
So some of the performances were a bit...
Oh, I thought Rob Lowe was fantastic.
Well, sure.
Yes.
Well, because he looked like a demon.
Yes. Yes, at last. It's true.
I thought Matt Damon didn't...
No, he wasn't cast well for it.
Wasn't very...
But he did his best. I feel like he gets the award for showing up. Anyway, yeah, Magic... So I didn't particularly care for Magic Mike.
And I guess Steven Soderbergh is not even affiliated with this...
No, I don't think he is.
I've not seen him on there.
No.
He's busy doing the Nick. Mm-hmm. I think he's done with the movies.
Yeah.
I don't even know why we're talking about him.
Well,
buzz off, Steven Soderbergh.
Yeah, no.
Get out of this podcast about this magician.
Well, maybe what that's going to do is that's going to explain why there's allegedly a tonal shift in the second movie. And from what I can understand of the trailer, Fish Mooney somehow survives her killing in Gotham and goes on
our favorite character from Gotham, if you recall an earlier podcast.
Speak for yourself, I love Donald Logue. And, she goes on.
I was apparently my sarcasm did not translate. Oh. The 2 feet were sitting away from each other. We did not care for Fish Mooney.
Married people never communicate.
We did not care for Jada Pinkett Smith in that production because she was doing some weird sort of Eartha Kitt thing.
She was doing an Eartha Kitt homage that like went around the corner.
Yeah.
And any hoodle. Long story short, Jada Pinkett Smith's in this somehow, and they got the gang back together.
Is Matthew McConaughey in it?
No.
Well, what is the point?
Well, the thing is he was the most interesting part of the original.
That's what I understand.
Because what he does in the original is he becomes complicit in the machinery of exploitation. And, you know, keeps the guys all hopped up on goofballs and insecure so that they need to feel pretty in front of women and so on and so forth.
And that was at the height of the McConaughey Renaissance.
Yeah, McConaissance, or whatever they called it. Yes. So yeah, anyway, he's not in this, and I guess that the movie revolves around Channing Tatum, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
You are a fan of his work.
I love... Well, look, he's super funny in 21 Jump Street.
Uh-huh.
He and Jonah Hill have great chemistry, and he's got really great comic timing, and he's a tremendously gifted physical actor.
Did he play the Johnny Depp or the Richard Grieco character?
Neither. He played the Dustin Nguyen character. And
tried to trip you up.
And it failed.
And now I've tripped myself up.
You're trying to remember what the Dustin Nguyen character looked like.
Yeah. I assume there was a mullet involved.
Oh, honey, it was the 80s. You could assume that about everybody. But I think the reason I really like Channing Tatum is because whatever image he's marketing to the press, it's as if a mischievous fairy went down to a potato field and picked out, like, the most symmetric spud and said, little potato, I'm going to elevate you. Give me the wish of your heart. And the potato said, I want to have a body like a professional wrestler, the dance moves of a profane Gene Kelly, and the press personality of an Etsy-loving grandma. And boom, the fairy began laughing maniacally and was like, I can't wait to tell people this back at the Magic Bubble Factory. And she made Channing Tatum. And I just think he's delightful.
You have me at a disadvantage because I always confuse him with Kellan Lutz.
Kellan Lutz you should not confuse with because he was the one who had the fantastic cameo on 30 Rock.
With
oh, sweet grandnephew.
Yeah. I get my sides of beef confused because they're dehumanized, as you say.
Yeah.
By the female gaze.
Well, the thing that is really... I think the problem I had with Magic Mike is the first one is that Soderbergh treats the female gaze as if it's something really filthy and perverse and dehumanizing, and there is no corresponding commentary that says maybe you should think about the male gaze. And I've seen movies that they make about like the lives of female strippers, and the male gaze is on, you know, full. Oh, this is just the way it is. This is the burden we labor under, and it's not called out as something particularly wrong. It's there, like pollution and flesh-eating bacteria, and it's something we all have to learn how to live with.
Mm.
So the gender politics encoded in the movie really turned me off the first time around. I'm kind of hoping, based on this preview, which has more ejaculatory image than I've seen in a decade's worth of Viagra ads.
Seen the teaser trailer where it's
Channing
Tatum welding.
With the sparks flying out from his crotch?
And then him lifting up his mask and looking at you and go, oh, hello, I almost didn't see you there.
Yeah. And the full trailer, there's him welding and sparks flying from his crotch. And then there's that slab of beef who is on True Blood humping a Coke machine at one point and then turning around to have the bottle go spurting across a convenience store in a move that is nowhere near subtle. And there's a lot of grinding and teeth are flashing and men are having a great time. So perhaps this is the sequel where they're like, the female gaze, hurrah! This time we don't feel pathetic and awful.
Directed by Gregory Jacobs this time around. And he has given us...
He doesn't look like he does a lot of stripping.
It looks like he does a lot of stuff with Steven Soderbergh.
Well, that's... Oh, he did. Did he do Contagion? I loved Contagion.
Well, he's been basically the assistant director on a bunch of projects.
Oh,
I'm gonna guess
this is his big boy one.
This is his. Why? It's gonna be his first movie or third movie.
Yeah, he did two other small ones, but
yeah. But he's,
oh, honey, he was in Miller's Crossing. You love that.
I do. He was a second assistant director there.
Anyway,
my favorite movie.
Exactly.
We will not ruin Miller's Crossing.
No.
Miller's Crossing.
It's impossible to ruin.
It can't be ruined.
No, because it's perfect.
Go ahead and
like
try.
Like Jaws. Jaws is perfect.
I dare you.
Yeah. No, of course not.
But anyhow, here we are.
Honey, I love you. I would never ruin Miller's Crossing for you.
Talking about
Magic Mike. I would be interested to see your take on Magic Mike, because I've down-talked it so relentlessly.
Yeah.
I think Magic Mike XXL is something I'm going to wait until it comes out on, like, HBO and then watch it and probably, like, live tweet my reactions, probably drunkenly.
Well, something to look forward to in 2016. Well,
so, yeah, no, like, the thing...
That and the presidential election.
Yeah.
It will be... It'll be the presidential election and Lisa live tweeting Magic Mike on cable.
Well, you know, I did live tweet the last presidential election drunk, so this one will not be any different. Anywho, the one thing... I was watching the preview again to prep for this podcast, and it's remarkably short on Matt Bomer.
Bomer or Bonner?
B-O-M-E-R, I think that's how you say his name, Bomer.
Does he wear any hats in this? I understand hats are his move.
Oh my god! Anyway,
he from the USA original series, guy with a hat.
My Young Ward.
No, what is the name of the show?
Oh god, what was it? White Collar?
White Collar, yeah. Where he is a master criminal who teams up with
a geriatric
FBI guy
and his inexplicably young hot
and
wife.
His young hot. Tiffany Amber Thiessen wife.
I love her. She seems like she'd be a fun hang.
Oh yeah, she'd be a very fun hang. But and the geriatric guy was basically basically, oh my charming young friend.
You are no way going to snake my wife.
You are incorrigible.
No,
and Willie.
I was going to say Willie Geist, but that's absolutely not right. He's not the New Yorker writer.
No.
It's not Willie Ames, because that was Eight Is Enough.
He was on Sex and the City.
And the sad thing is I know his character's name was Stanford, and yeah. I can't even... Anyway, he was on it, too. He's very nice. He's got Willie Garson, deaf comic timing.
Yeah, there you go.
No, but the thing...
But no Matt Bomer in the trailers?
Well, there was like a little bit of one. What I found...
Was he in the first one?
Yes.
Oh.
In the first one, he plays a dude who likes...
Did he wear a hat?
I don't remember what he didn't wear, to be honest with you. What I remember is his plot line, because in the first one, all of them were sad for different reasons, or all of them were like weird and warped, and like his weird warp thing was he liked to bring men home to have sex with his wife while he watched. And that was his thing.
Well, that is a hobby.
Yeah. And that was the thing. And the thing that actually like sent me around the bend and made me think I should just start a feminist zine and get this all out someplace else was Joe Manchi.
What would you call your feminist zine?
I don't know. We could brainstorm ideas after I finish my sentence.
Okay.
Take a drink while I'm talking.
Lisa interrupted a famous zine.
There you go. And every cover of my zine would be like another still from the movie Girl Interrupted, probably with Winona Ryder getting dunked under the tub, because that's my favorite scene when Whoopi Goldberg dumps her under. Anyway, to get back to Joe Manji, whatever slab of beef dude, he's referred to in the movie as Big Dick Richie, because he uses a penis pump. And this scene is so sad. It's so sad that a man has to use technology to artificially supplement what nature has given him. And I thought, you know, in the hands of somebody who's actually sensitive to how we gender people in America and the male and female gaze, this could be a great parallel with, say, breast implants. But here it was just seen, oh, it's so tragic. Why can't women just love men for their natural penises? It's just so sad. So, anyway, that was the first Magic Mike. My sincerest hope is there's no pathos in this one. I hope it's just men who are inexplicably happy about taking off their clothes in front of women. Like toddlers. Except, you know, not.
Why can't women just love men for their natural... That can be the first cover story in Lisa Interrupted.
Well, see, then I'm going to have Angelina Jolie holding a knife.
That's a one feminist of scene. Sure, why not?
Or perhaps poor sad Brittany Murphy.
Mm. Well, now you're bringing us all down.
I am.
I see that Kevin Nash, former professional wrestler, is in the...
He is. He's a very sad stripper because he has to wear a knee brace and pop a lot of pills to stay limber for the ladies.
Holy cow.
Yes, no, like the first Magic Mike is just sordid in a lot of different ways.
Wow.
Like, it is not the most sordid strip movie I've ever seen. That honor goes to, like, Night at the Blue Iguana, which is just this... Night at the Blue Iguana started as an acting class exercise, which should tell you everything you need to know. And it features Daryl Hannah as a strung-out stripper, and Sandra Oh as a stripper who's secretly a poet, but the Sestinas aren't paying the bills. And then Sheila Kelly is a stripper who's banging her brother, and it's all very sad.
I think you're giving Showgirls short shrift.
I've never seen Showgirls.
Really?
Really.
Hmm. Saw it in the theater.
See, this is why I married you, so that I wouldn't have to see it, because you already did.
Yeah, and, you know, not... Mm-hmm. I don't even find it... I know there's a school of thought that just says, oh, this is great, can't be fun. They are lying to you. Those are people trying to justify wasting any amount of time on the movie. It is not fun.
A friend of mine is a film critic, and he showed me the press package that all the critics who went to the screening got. It includes like a hardback commemorative coffee table book about the making of Showgirls. Like, they treated this like it was an ILM project.
Yeah.
It's amazing the press around that.
I was, when that movie came out, I was a reporter for a daily newspaper in a sad, miserable desert town.
Temecula?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing secular about Temecula.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually, the local morality club picketed it. Picketed Showgirls!
Did you get to cover that?
No, no, aww, I did man, not. That's... I did not get to cover it, and and thank heavens for that. No, and why would you pick it? Because it's so. It was so unbearably lame. I was so bored watching that movie.
Oh, see,
bored.
That's, yeah, that's it's not supposed. Naked people should not be boring.
Gina Gershon, she tries to crank it up to 11.
Gina Gershon should never be boring.
Yeah.
That's a misuse of a Gina Gershon. There should be laws against
there's
that.
There's the bald guy from L.A. Law is all creepy and
Daniel Benzali?
I have no idea. No. Alan Rakins.
Alan Rakins? Okay.
Alan Rakins.
That doesn't ring a bell.
Robert Davi is in it. It's just...
There were no
stars in heaven when Showgirls was released, for they were all there on the screen.
Kyle MacLachlan is in it.
Kyle MacLachlan, oh, he's terrible.
Oh, I bet. That makes me so sad.
There are a lot of people in that movie who you would go, oh, you're so much better in everything else you've ever done.
Yeah.
Paul Verhoeven was the director.
He's done a lot of really... tonally challenged.
Except most of the time when he does the tonally challenged, it's, oh, mm-hmm. RoboCop, you're a over-the-top commentary on things, or mm-hmm. Total Recall, or even the Bug movie, where the Doogie Himmler fights the bugs.
Then poor Denise Richards has to take a shower while everybody else keeps her clothes on.
That movie. That
actually pretty much sums up her career in the 90s, is poor Denise Richards has to take a shower while everyone else remains clothed.
Mm-hmm.
It's... God, no wonder she ran to the arms of Charlie Sheen.
Yes, and the E! Network.
Oh, is she on E! now?
She had that show, Denise Richards, colon, It's Complicated, to quote the great Joel McHale from The Soup.
I'm almost sorry I missed that.
Yeah, it was not a very well-regarded...
Or well-publicized,
no.
Obviously.
It did not capture that Kardashian fire that...
Well, she's basically the Mary Astor of the Audis, when you think about it.
Yeah,
you
this know? Is the second podcast this week that we talked about Mary Astor.
Because I was in the room when you were watching that movie, and mm-hmm. every time I see the Maltese Falcon, what always strikes me is how insanely period-specific Mary Astor is as an actress.
Yeah.
She's not one of those timeless thespian talents you could airlift into another period.
No.
You know, it's the same thing as Doris Day, who I know just sets her teeth on edge.
Yes.
So.
Oh, man. Do not like Doris Day.
I know you don't. Yeah. So it's that. And it's always fun to see. It's always fun to try and play the game, you know, period specific or timeless and see who stands up for which one in each era, you know?
Yes.
In this case with Magic Mike, I'm going to say that it's possible that Channing Tatum manages to transcend period, but it's too soon to see.
Oh, there you go.
No, I surprised myself by how much I enjoyed him in 21 Jump Street, and I have a remarkable amount of goodwill for him. But between that and G.I. Joe, like, he shows up, he nails the part, he's got a sense of humor about it, he's not, like, all method and broody.
He hits his marks.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and doesn't hog the food at the craft services table.
I wouldn't know. I have never been around him when he's been working at the craft
services. I'm creating a backstory
for him. Oh, you are,
him.
Huh?
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Okay.
Tom's off to dance.
Yeah, great for him.
Yeah.
Can weld, apparently.
Apparently so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Welding is one of the skills that comes in handy.
It does. It does.
And you can use the torture creme brulee, too, I understand. Just the light touch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's really the summer of handsome men at the movies. Between this and San Andreas.
Oh, I was about to go in the Chris Pratt direction, but you're going to the San Andreas.
Chris Pratt, I guess, is handsome.
We've covered
about
that already.
Movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're going to San Andreas.
San Andreas.
The Rock punches an earthquake.
The Rock is very mad at that earthquake. That earthquake is going to pay, and how?
Oh my God! So I find that someone needs to write like the long, boring, not long, boring, but long, like Tom Junot-esque piece on the problem of The Rock in the movies.
What is the problem with The Rock in the movies,
He's
Lisa?
He's insanely charismatic.
He is very
and
charismatic.
And watchable. And there is no vehicle that works for him. Like, I made you watch Be Cool because The Rock was in it as like the gay hula dancer that one time.
Yes, he's the henchman.
And we saw The Rock and Stifler do The Rainforest, whatever movie that was.
Oh, yeah.
I even sat...
Sean William Scott.
Yeah.
For those of you who do not know, for those of you who haven't been formally introduced to Stifler as we have.
Yeah. Let's see. I sat through the movie where he plays...
you watched Doom.
I did. I actually own Doom.
Yeah, you do.
Because I have watched multiple times.
Because you lost a bet.
Oh my God. No, because The Rock's in it. oh my God, is The Rock in it? He's all in every frame. And anyway, the point is, The Rock needs better movies.
He certainly does.
And this one, where he punches an earthquake, just looks like another movie where you want it to be good because it's The Rock, and yet you're going to be like, really? This
We've is got his sick. HBO series sitting on the DVR.
It's like Schrodinger's series right now, because yeah. if I watch it, I don't know if it's good or bad, so yeah. I can keep hoping.
I have a feeling we are going to be bitterly disappointed, and he'll be pleasant. The reason I feel we're going to be disappointed is Rob Corddry is in it as his little buddy.
I kind of like Rob Corddry when he plays Venal.
Well, I think you'll be happy then.
See, cause... there we go. Maybe I will be happy.
Okay.
Look, as long as it's not Entourage Miami, I'm sure I'll be fine.
I have pulled up the Wikipedia.
It's really not a podcast with us unless one of us is reading a Wikipedia entry to the other.
For San Andreas, I encourage the reader. I am not going to read it to you. Uh-huh. But I encourage the reader to try and make
Wait,
it
Kylie
through.
Wait, Kylie Minogue is in this movie?
Yeah, of course she is.
Is everyone doing the locomotion?
Yeah, everyone is. That's what sets off the earthquake. Everyone does the locomotion that triggers the San Andreas fault.
It was as easy as doing your ABCs.
Yeah. So anyhow, what this is it, Lisa, it's uh-huh. a rolling series of earthquakes that starts apparently at Hoover Dam, uh-huh. works its way down to L.A., then up the coast to San Francisco, as earthquakes do.
So what it's doing is it's basically taking the Sunset Foodie Road Tour.
Yeah, and it's apparently chasing after The Rock's daughter. The Rock's chesty daughter, to quote the whatever review I read that in. I think it was Film Drunk.
So a chesty woman being bounced around yeah. by an earthquake.
They know their
Talk
audience.
Talk about the male gaze.
Yes,
oh my
they
God.
They know their audience. And Carla Gugino is...
I think it's adorable that this Wikipedia thing thinks that Marin County would actually permit a relief camp to be set up there.
Yes.
Marin County can't even fathom the idea of affordable housing. Why would they handle earthquake refugees?
The Rock is flying helicopters to rescue people, yes. and then San Francisco floods, and they're driving boats around the flooded hills.
So the Rock knows both aviation and the law of the sea.
The Rock has mastered all forms of conveyance.
Well, then why can't he just teleport over his busty daughter and take her up to Orion mm-hmm. or someplace? Where is that part in the Wikipedia where they explain why that can't happen?
Yes, let's see. Coit Tower, already engulfed in flames.
You know what's really ironic about that is mm-hmm. Coit Tower was... is associated with Lily Coit, who was something of a firebug.
Yes.
Ran around with the fire engine dudes all the time for mm-hmm. reasons that have faded into history.
Yes, you get to watch The Rock parachute into AT&T Park.
No, I'm sorry, I don't work in San Francisco anymore. I would love a work day where The Rock is just
They commandeer a boat and
window.
Hear a warning over the radio that a tsunami is approaching the city. You and I have actually been in been evacuated from a tsunami.
Yeah, oh, that was... I was such an uncomfortable day.
Yes.
Although I should add, I was pregnant at the time, and yeah. so I was having 24-hour day sickness, and it was the worst.
Well, I believe this movie actually mistakes tsunamis for tidal waves, because you have the yeah. giant wave that...
But that's not a tsunami. A tsunami is...
No, making... exactly. The tsunami floods the city.
Why can't The Rock punch a meteorologist yes. and tell them what's going
and
on?
And absorb their knowledge. That's exactly. how The Rock learns things. By punching people. Oh, now I understand derivatives. Thank you, stockbroker.
That would be the worst, best superpower ever. I
yes. think. Now I'm going to go learn about like constitutional law. Come here, Anton Scalia.
Like you couldn't ask your wife how her
Anton
day was without
Scalia.
Without punching her. Like,
not Anton Scalia. He would be a totally different judge, a cooler judge.
Why would you victimize Anton Scalia? He's not the one who wrote the ruling.
Yes. Please don't hit me. I am not the man you want to hit. That's my imitation.
That's a no way.
No, not at all.
At least you're not doing your Pope imitation.
No. Yeah, oh, also the Rock performs CPR on his daughter, his chesty daughter, and revives her.
Wait, how many ribs does she break in the process?
I don't know.
Because CPR is not gentle. It's not like you just sort of tap, 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 poof. And someone revives. I mean, it's a massive physical
it was the,
trauma.
Yeah, it was the 538 article mm-hmm. that detailed The Rock's insane fish diet. How he eats 10,000 pounds.
He's basically responsible for the plummeting cod stocks off Newfoundland.
Yes.
Was the upshot of that article?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Lots of fish.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have lots of fish.
Yes, we do.
Because we for listeners at home, we belong to a fish CSA. So. And the reason we belong to the Fish CSA is we are trying to support fishermen who stick to the local San Francisco Bay Area.
Hippie.
And we are hippies. And you know, they catch the fish in environmentally responsible ways. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to put our money where our mouth is, literally. And once every 2 weeks, I drag my daughter into the backyard of some hippie in Oakland, and I pull out a bag of fish from a freezer in a move that in no way feels weird and contraband, and then we cook it up.
I don't like it being called a fish CSA because it sounds like rebellious fish who have renounced America.
And they're like tiny little Confederate flags.
Yes, exactly. So I don't feel so bad about cooking them and gutting them.
Well, then you're going to love calling them a fish CSA then, true. Because, you know, you can say the self will rise again in my belly.
Mm.
So anyway, yes, the rock eats a lot of fish because fish is generally a lot of protein for the calorie load.
Yeah.
I myself enjoy fish.
Yes, you want to turn fish into a breakfast meal.
I feel like fish are a breakfast meal, Phil.
No.
Yeah.
You're wrong.
They're a breakfast staple around the world.
Really?
Yeah.
See,
kippers.
Okay, kippers and
I think a lot
smoked
of
salmon.
I feel like a lot of Japanese people might have something to say about fish in the morning.
Look, all I know is you wake up, you've maybe had one or two or three rusty nails, and you're feeling a little squiffy, and the last thing you want to do is smell raw fish.
Kippers are not raw fish. They're smoked. Or lox on bagels. How is that not fish for the morning and breakfast? Also, I feel like we need to uncouple the idea of foods at certain times of the day, you know? I mean, before I married you, I basically had cereal for dinner every night.
That always depresses me.
I don't like to cook.
I know that you don't. I do, so.
Yeah, see? Perfect. This is why I married you, because you watch Showgirls instead of me, and you cook.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'd eat cereal for dinner.
What wine paired with the cereal?
It depends on the cereal.
Uh-huh.
For example, grape nuts is rich and robust,
uh-huh.
and it microwaves really well. So you want a red to go with your grape nuts.
Okay.
I feel like
Did you pour it right in the bowl, or did you have it like in a separate glass?
A glass? I'm not a savage. Okay. My God. No, I pour myself a nice Cabernet with the grape nuts. Oatmeal, however, I feel takes a lighter, crisper red.
Okay, sure.
Unless, like, because I like to put peanut butter in my oatmeal, and that gives it a nice savory note, too.
How about the crunch berries? What's a good year for crunch berries?
Well, I think in that case you go with Boone's Farm, something in the White family.
I think you go with a ration of grog, so the Cap'n Crunch can feel like he's back in his Navy days.
Yeah. No, I think if you'd ask me seriously, I think that you would probably use white wines with like your Weetabix or your shredded wheat.
Sure.
Because those are slightly lighter textures. I think a rice cereal or a corn cereal also lends itself nicely to whites.
Cookie Crisp cereal. What wine would you drink with Cookie Crisp?
Okay, so bearing in mind, I don't use milk on sugary cereals because I always like to drink my cereal milk, and sugary cereal milk is the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And Cookie Crisp is more of a dessert. I'd have a port.
How about Trix?
Trix? Oh, Jesus. First of all, Trix are kind of the wine cooler of cereal. Therefore, you'd have the wine cooler of wine coolers with them.
Oh, silly Lisa. Trix are for kids. No wine there.
Wine coolers, I said. See, that's how I got around it. You know, no one over 18 drinks wine coolers unless they're me.
Snap, crackle, pop.
Snap, crackle, pop. Again, it's the rice cereal rule, so I would probably have a Chardonnay with it.
Okay. Well, you've really thought this through.
I'm a cereal sommelier.
Yeah.
I feel like... No, okay.
Maybe you should... Get a Kickstarter campaign, start a restaurant.
Where I basically suggest wine pairings with cereal?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I think Cocoa Krispies are another one that lend themselves well to a dessert wine.
No.
Yeah. No. Yeah, no, the one I'm having a problem with right now is Golden Grahams. Well, because it's tricky since it's got the Graham flour and that's kind of a middleweight cereal, but it's sweet. So you want something to balance that out, but not something minerally.
Oh.
You can't. Maybe a light crisp red.
Maybe some Thunderbird.
Sangiovese.
Yeah. Okay.
I've never had Thunderbird. What is that?
It's a fortified wine. What's the word? Thunderbird.
Oh, my goodness. Is it like Mad Dog 2020?
Yeah, a little bit.
Or Ripple? Is Ripple a real thing, or is it like a joke brand that people use to do
wine? No, I think it is actually.
Here, look it up on Wikipedia. Ripple Wine Wikipedia.
You can keep talking while I'm typing.
Well, so. No, I'm just... Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah.
Flavored fortified wines.
Yeah.
See, the thing is fortified makes it like it should be nutritious, like a breakfast cereal is.
What's the word? Thunderbird. What's the price? 40 twice.
So $80?
No, no, it was like 80 cents.
Really?
It was like, or whatever. It was It was a cheap
anyway,
cheap
so
wine.
This is a challenge to you, the readers. Come up with your own cereal and wine pairings for us, and, mm-hmm. and let us know if you've ever tried this. There's nothing wrong with grape nuts in a nice glass of wine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've...
I
think we've talked enough nonsense for tonight.
I think we've ruined enough movies. We've ruined Magic Mike tonight.
Yes.
We briefly touched on Showgirls. We talked about Midnight at the Blue Iguana.
Yep.
Which I would not...
We've talked about many Steven Soderbergh movies, which are probably better than Magic Mike.
Yeah. Was he responsible for Contagion? Because I love it. I love that
movie.
His. Oh my God, do I love that movie.
That's one I haven't seen, but
that's my gosh, it's great.
That's the one where Gwyneth Paltrow dies?
Yes.
Well, no wonder you love it.
I should also probably remember, I'm pro Gwyneth Paltrow.
Sure.
You know, but she's a philanderer. And
my goodness, this has taken a scolding turn.
A sharply moralistic turn.
Boy, oh boy, I was
which, come to think of it, like it's one of the movies where he has both sympathetic portrayals of female characters because Kate Winslet is very heroic in it, and so is Marion Cotillard. But then there's also cheating woman must be punished by unleashing a pandemic across the world, which she does. Gwyneth Paltrow is literally pestilence,
and
in this.
That is why you do not step out on your loved ones.
No,
says because, J. Walter Weatherman.
Yeah, well, it's Rich that's coming from Soderbergh, who mm-hmm. fathered a child when he was with...
This is really taking a scolding turn.
Would you like some wine and grape nuts, honey?
Welcome to Finger Wagging with Phil and Lisa.
Everything is interconnected, Phil. You can't lift art out of context.
Brought to you by Tut Tut Tut.
A fortified wine.
Yes. Well...
Yeah, your rusty nail's not done yet.
No, I'm almost done.
Okay.
I can pound it down.
Mm-hmm. Do you really pound those?
No, I savor it because it's a cocktail made with love and care.
Yes.
By a quality craftsman.
That would be you, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I host podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I make fine drinks.
Yes. Yes, you do.
Mm-hmm.
You don't make them for me, so I can't confirm that.
No. Well, you have a very limited palate. When it comes to mixed drinks, you like your Pimm's cup.
I do. I do like a good Pimm's cup.
And that's about it. And like a chocolatini or what, apple tea.
I like a tequila Collins.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Vodka Collins.
No, tequila Collins.
Oh my heavens.
No, when I was at my cousin Tommy's wedding, he's the one who's the professional Beatles impersonator.
Yeah.
We're
just going to leave that in the middle of the room.
My cousin Polly brought his once and future ex-wife Liz. She's the one that had the biker wedding. And
yep, another just detail we're gonna walk right past.
Anyway, Liz,
Beatles impersonators and biker weddings. And was, tell us more about the vodka-tini.
Because no, it was a tequila Collins, and Liz is a bartender at a biker bar. And I wanted to go get a vodka Collins, and Liz is like, "No, this will blow your sock. This will blow your socks off." Only she used another word instead of socks. But she made me a tequila Collins, and it was phenomenal. And I had like three in front of my mother, who like disapproves of alcohol. So you know it has to be great if I'm willing to risk my mother's wrath.
Yeah.
To do like cereal tequila drinking in front of her.
Mm.
So anyway, I love a tequila Collins.
Okay.
I love I liked White Russians until The Big Lebowski came out, and then I just feel weird about drinking them now.
Well, sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Are there any more celebrities to shame? Are there any more
I don't know what they're up to.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, as always, if the listener has any movies that they would like us to ruin, you're feel free to suggest them.
We may not listen to the suggestions.
No, we likely won't.
But I like hearing them.
I like hearing from people.
Yeah, and thank you for offers of gin.
Yep.
And the hot mess comment, which you did not give to me, but gave to Phil.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm available on Twitter at L Schmeiser. That's spelled LSCHMEISER.
I'm at Philip Michaels
mm-hmm.
with one L.
Yes.
Only jerks spell it with two L's.
Well, Michaels would look really funny with two L's.
Spelling.
And that's it. Once again, this has been Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies.
With your host, Philip Michaels, and the other person, Lisa Schmeiser. Who's not really talking to me right now, just sort of looking
mm-hmm.
kind of scared, actually. I think I'm going to back slowly away from the microphone.
Do that.
Good night, everybody.